So, we have a very interesting topic today with a not so interesting title, friends. So you guys have had a number of topics like relationship with, coming up, Chris?
Relationship with God, relationship with the significant other, relationship with the saints, and we're going to do relationship with my confession father. We did relationship with strangers last week.
So, lots of relationships.
Lots, I know. It's too many for me to handle.
Yeah. So when me and Frisky told me about this topic, I was a bit like...
We know what you said.
Oh, he told you what I said?
Yeah. He told some of us.
There was many words used, many of which were not Christian. So basically, I thought, you know what? Friends are the things that, the people that influence you most in your life. So let's have a look at that and let's try to see what can actually happen from friendship, both down there and both up here. So both in a negative way, also in a positive way. So friends can really be the start of something very, very, very big. Okay? And it's something you don't appreciate when you're quite young, but it's something that can be very big. So.
We've got to aim out there.
All right. So, I'm going to tell you a story. Have you guys ever heard of a Buddha Philemon Lahari? One of the monks for St. Macarius Monastery. This is a guy that died probably 40 years ago, 30 years ago. He was a very saintly man, a very quiet man, didn't really interfere in anyone's business. And to kind of set the atmosphere for this story, I'm going to tell you a couple of other stories about it, mainly because I don't have much to say about friendship. So I'm going to fill it up with some other stories. Okay, so he was a very, very holy monk. So one day, and he was a bit crazy as well, but he pretended to be a little bit crazy, something we call a holy fool. So one day he was sitting there in church, and his head was buried in his knees, and a bishop walked into the church. And so the bishop gave this long, beautiful sermon talking about this and Bible verses, Mishnah affair. And then this monk was just sitting with his head buried in his legs. And so the bishop walked past and wasn't happy that this monk didn't kiss his hand and ask for his blessing. So he said to him, "You, it's me." And he goes, "Philemon." He goes, "Okay. How long have you been here for?" He said, "I don't know. Came here when I was maybe 18. I don't know how old I am now. Not really sure." So the bishop wasn't really happy with his answer. He thought he was kind of brushing him off. He goes, "All right. What do you think of my sermon?" So Buddha Philemon looks at him and goes, "What's up?" He goes, "You were listening, huh?" He goes, "No, I was hearing someone, you were speaking about something." He goes, "Oh, was that a sermon?" And the bishop goes, "Of course it was a sermon. What are you trying to say?" He goes, "Oh, I just thought you were talking about yourself and showing off your knowledge." And this bishop, I want you to imagine, this is 40 years ago, okay? So today you can't say that to the bishop. Imagine 40 years ago. And so the bishop looked at him and goes, "Now? What are you saying?" And then he goes, "What, you're offended?" The Buddha Philemon says, "Are you offended?" He goes, "Yeah." He goes, "Okay, if you're offended, then that means the old man still exists within you, okay? Because you don't know how to handle insults." Anyway, so they moved on, and he just left the church. And the bishop was like, "Who the hell is this guy?" All right. Later on, a couple of years later, everyone was looking at this guy, and he was really holy, but no one knew exactly what was going on with him. And it was a time that I think it was the Six-Day War, whatever that was, in 1967.
Don't look at me, I still wasn't even born then. Right.
And there was a war, and what happened was, at one point, one of the planes, got stuck in the sky and started going towards the monastery. And so they could see it coming towards them, and all the monks started screaming, and everyone was panicked. And then they see Buddha Philemon running, and starts going up to the top of the bell tower. And he runs up to the top, and they see him start dancing and clapping. Okay? And then they're like, "What is wrong with this guy?" And as the plane's coming down, they just see it go like that, deflect, just like bounce. It's got no motor, just bounce, and then go crash in the desert. And they're like, what's going on? So then they brought him down, and they said, what happened? Because you guys didn't see? St. Macarius was sitting there with his stick hitting the plane. And they're like, okay. So this kind of sets up for this next story. So then one day, the same Buddha Philemon said, he woke up at 4 a.m. in the morning. No, it was at night, 11 p.m. at night. And he woke up the abbot and all the other monks, rang the bells. He goes, "Everyone get ready, get the monastery ready, the Pope's coming." He said, "The Pope's coming, how do you know?" He goes, "I know he's coming. Just get everything ready." And so everyone was like, "All right." And so they started preparing everything. They thought he was going to be there like 6 a.m. So everyone's waking up early, they prepared the Eucharist, everything's ready, they're cleaning up everything, no one comes. 10 o'clock, what if you're on? Where's the Pope? Because don't worry, he's coming, he's coming. They're waiting, there's no Pope coming. And when the Pope comes, it comes with a real pomp, you know? So there's cars, there's a bit of action, nothing. No one hears anything. Finally gets to about 6 p.m. And they go, where's the Pope? He goes, he's there now. So then they're waiting, there's no cars, there's nothing. They just see three young guys, 18, walk to the front desk. They walk to the knock on the door. And they go, where's the Pope? He goes, there's the Pope. And they go, what? He goes, look, that's Amba Musharraf Mir, who became a very famous bishop. That's a very famous priest, Abu Ibrahim. And that's Pope Shenouda. And I'm like, what? And then I guess all right, it's right. Until later on, 30 years later, when everyone picked onto the fact, oh my God, that guy became the Pope. And that was Pope Shenouda. Okay? So, why did I say this story? What are the odds of three guys rocking up to the monastery, being best mates? One's a Pope, one's a bishop, one's a priest. And don't worry about the clergy side of things, this can happen to lay people. What are the odds of three friends rocking up? Do you think these three friends were just three normal blokes, and then because of a Buddha Philemon, God decided to pick the three? No? Do you think that's what happened? Do you think these three walked up and then God said, you know, I'm going to put my Holy Spirit right now and do these three guys? No. It's three friends gathered together, psych each other up, move towards one direction. And the result is what? They change the face of the church. All right? So, my point now is what friends can do. Because you're always doing something as friends. It's either positive or negative. And it can literally change the face of the church. So, Mother Teresa. I alone cannot change the world, but I can cast the stone across the water to create many ripples. She's saying, I as one person can do nothing. But I can throw a stone into the lake, and that lake creates ripples. And each was only one stone, but it's many ripples. And each ripple is a circle that is bigger than the one before it, correct? So each circle reaches further than the stone ever did. And you can actually, if you watch it, it's very hard to trace it to the end of the ripples. Okay? They might get smaller and smaller and smaller, but they keep going. So the impact of one stone has many, many, many consequences that you may not foresee. So, but there's also a negative ripple. Okay? So, there's a nice story. I won't tell you where I got it from because it wasn't a very nice occasion, but it's alright. Was there were two old ladies gossiping, and some of you guys may know this story.
No, we know the two old ladies.
Huh? You may know these two old ladies. There's many of them.
So
these tenders were gossiping, and the priest walked up to them and said to them, stop gossiping. Gossiping? We're not gossiping. Because yes, you are. They go, no, what's gossip? I'm not gossiping, I'm just talking about the other lady, what she did last night. I go, what's gossip? So the priest said, all right, I want you tomorrow morning to get a pillar, and I want you to walk up again to the top of the cathedral, up to the top of the bell tower, and I want you to get a knife, and I want you to stab the pillow as much as you can, and I want you to let the feathers go everywhere. So she went and did that, and then she came down and said to him, I did what you're doing, you crazy old man. You know, what do you want now? And he goes, all right, now I want you to go walk in the street and collect all the feathers that you destroyed, you left out of the city. She goes, it's impossible. He goes, that's gossip. One action, very simple, from one position, now leaves remains all over the place that you can never get back. And it's exactly the same as a stone. Okay, it's a stone. Imagine you're sitting on the side of a lake, you get a stone, and you throw it in, and it's got many ripples. Okay? Imagine. How do you stop those ripples? How do you stop the ripples? Maybe you could try to go get the stone again. Now imagine this was a dead lake. I've thrown one stone, it's made some ripples, and then I walk into that river, or that lake, to try to get the stone again. What happens?
You create more ripples.
Every step you take, every movement you make, makes more ripples, until eventually you've made a total mess of the lake. It's the exact same thing. Once you have thrown that stone, once there is an action, there are multiple consequences and reactions that go throughout the world. And you cannot bring them back. You cannot pull them back. All right? So I'm kind of laboring the point because I want to make this really, really clear. Nothing stands in isolation. Everything has an action. Everything has a reaction. everything will have far-reaching consequences. All right. So there's a guy called John Donne, a famous poet. He said, "No man is an island." It's a famous saying, right? Why did he say that? Because nothing you do exists in isolation. Nothing you do is in a vacuum. Nothing. All right. Everything I do has an impact on those people around me. Sometimes even on those people I don't know. So let me give you an example. And for those who are upstairs, you might have heard me use this example before. Dave probably heard it. Imagine I come home from school one day, all right, and I'm starving when I was a little kid, when I was younger. I'm starving. And Mum's sitting there, she's cleaning, she's trying to prepare stuff because Dad's going to come home. And then I crack at Mum. I snap at her. "Where's my food? I'm starving. I've been at school all day. I've been at uni all day. I want to eat." All right? And then Mum gets usubby because I'm usubby. She goes, "You know what? I'm not doing anything in this house. I've been working all day. No one gives me appreciation." She goes to her room and doesn't cook a thing. Dad comes home, he's working 12 hours.
You got surveillance camera in my
head. He's starving. He's starving. He walks home. He goes, "Malaya. Then the lack." All right? And then your mum goes, "Hit the car!" All right? And she cracks it in and she goes, "What do you want? Okay? You're just like your son." And he's angry. He doesn't eat. He's angry. He goes to the fridge. He finds himself nothing. Gets himself two pieces of toast. Puts some cheese on it. He's annoyed. Okay? He goes to sleep. He's annoyed at his wife. He doesn't look at her. Doesn't give her a nice kiss on the cheek. All right? Wakes up in the morning. Goes to work. He's asked him. He hasn't eaten. No one made him breakfast. No one ironed his shirt. He goes to work, he fires three guys. Those three guys go to their houses. What do you think they do to their wives? Okay? And a cycle begins. And I've made this a bit drama. But this is reality.
No, really.
This is reality. Every action I take has an impact on the people around me. What do you think that's going to mean for friendship? Okay? Now, it's like, for example, a candle. And I'm going to use this example, and I always use it. It's like I walk into a dark room and it's pitch black. And I walk in there and I've got a candle in my hand. And I forgot to light the candle. And then I go around and I'm waving around trying to look at things. Can I see anything? No. Imagine in that room there's another 50 people, all of them standing with candles and they're not lit. Can I go with my candle and touch another people's candles? No, it's got to look at them. Okay? So I don't have a neutral effect. There's no such thing as sitting on the fence, which is why, you know, Christ in Revelation says, "I will vomit you out of your loophole." Because I either have a negative effect or a positive effect. And so when I walk into that room, I'm either walking in with darkness or light. I can't walk in with half a candle, with half light. No such thing. Okay? But what happens if I walk into that room and I've got a light on my candle? I've got a flame. Number one, I can see. I can see what's going on. Number two, everyone in that room, as long as it's not too big, energy, stuff I can't remember anymore. Okay? Everyone in that room can start to see as well. Number three, those that can see can then go touch my candle and walk around and touch other people's candles. And then go into another room and touch someone else's candles. Then go into another room and touch another person's candles. Do you guys follow that? And that's how things change. So every action I have has a reaction. To the extent that there was a famous Russian saint by the name of Saint Seraphim of Sarov, who said that one day they came to him and said, "How is it you've changed the whole church? That before you, there was so much darkness in the church, and then after you, there's so much light in the church. That people are repenting in cities far, far different to you in Russia. How? Why?" He said, simple. If you find peace, thousands around you will find peace. And that's the reality, and that's the example we get constantly. I'm going to show you that. Now, why do you think I'm talking about that when it comes to relationship with my friends? Why? Yeah.
If you have peace, you can share with your friends, or if your friends have peace, they can share with you.
Exactly. So did you see there, there were two things that were happening. It's my effect on the people next to me, and how I am affected by the people around me. Alright? So let's flesh that out a bit. So, the next thing we need to realize is that saints come in clusters. They come in clusters. For some reason, if you chase the history of the church, you will find that saints come in clumps. Every now and then they come by themselves. They'll come from a family where there were no saints. They'll come from a family where there was no holy people, where there was just a really strong person. And even then, it's usually because they had a contact with a Christian, someone who was holy. But what you also find is that they come in these really clusters, like grapes. All right. One of the most famous clusters is the family of St. Basil the Great. Can you guys see in the icon? How many people can you see? How many people? Eight. In his family, there were eight saints. Eight saints. And not Mickey Mouse kind of saints, you know, where someone died, got martyred, and so I made it to the synaxarium, and maybe I was a bit friends with the Pope at the time. We're trying to fit. Okay? No, these were serious, serious, serious saints. That never happened.
Okay? That's a new one, Mickey.
So, I don't know if you can read that. There was a guy called St. Leonidas of Alexandria. Not their family, but just so you can see the connection. That guy died for his faith, so he was a martyr. His son was Origen of Alexandria. You guys heard of Origen? Origen wanted to become a martyr, but his mother hid his clothes, so he couldn't go out naked and become a martyr. Seriously. Okay? So then, he was a great theologian. He had some mistakes, give and take. Okay? But he was still a very holy man. When they exiled him because of his mistakes, they sent him on some island. While he was on that island, he met a guy called St. Gregory the Wonder Worker. Have you guys heard of him before? Put your hand up if you've heard of him. He's in the commemoration of the saints, guys. Okay? The wonder worker, the miracle performer. Okay? He was a young guy that met Origen on this island and was so influenced by Origen, even though Origen was theoretically excommunicated, that he became a saint and became a miracle performer. He was the spiritual father of St. Macrina. Who's St. Macrina? She was a gentle old theater.
Oh.
She was a gentle old theater. I'm not sure what the reaction was about. So she was a gentle...
I think he thought you meant do the Macarena.
It's cute. It's cute.
It's
true. She was the same Teta. Same Macarena the Elder. Now, we don't know much about her, except that she was a very holy lady, okay? And that she had a spiritual father who was St. Gregory the Wonder Worker. Now, this is where things get interesting. She had a son called St. Basil the Elder. He was a bishop. Okay? Back then, bishops could get married. He married a woman called St. Emilia. They had five children. They had St. Macrina the Younger, a young girl. They had St. Basil the Great. Heard of him before? One of the greatest theologians of the church. They had St. Gregory of Nyssa. Heard of him before? Again, one of the greatest theologians of the church. They had St. Peter Sebasti of Sebast.
Oh, you're kidding me, dude.
Who was a bishop.
They're all saints.
All saints. Not wow. Mickey Mouse.
I thought your family was
okay.
Good.
You've got... And then they had St. Nacratius, who was the youngest one, who died young, okay, who, even though he was very young, was a powerful ascetic. One family, direct blood, eight saints. Indirect, spiritual father, that's a saint. Indirect, spiritual father, that's a saint. Indirect, physical father, that's the same. What are the odds of that happening? And like I said, not Mickey Mouse kind of guys, all right guys, we're going to be martyrs for Christ, all of us go do it together, and they all die and they all come saints. No, these guys were in their right as saints. Okay? How does that happen? Saints come in clusters. Everything you do affects the people around you. Everything that original guy that became a martyr did affected his son, who then became the spiritual father of somebody else, who then became the spiritual father of somebody else, who was then the grandmother of a family of saints. So everything we do impacts on the people around us. And we need to realize that. There is nothing that I do in isolation. Just like I told you guys that story of those three 18-year-olds, one who became a bishop, one who became perpetual order, and one became a famous priest. Saints come in clusters. If I have a positive impact on the person around me, they too can become a saint. But what happens if I have a negative impact? So, what's more powerful? An individual or a cluster?
A cluster.
Of course, right? It's logic. So, how does an avalanche start? Do you guys know how an avalanche starts? No?
Usually someone sneezes.
No.
That would be you, Ted.
So the way an avalanche starts, very interestingly, Wikipedia, is that you get normally a soft layer of snow or an ice shelf, but normally it's a soft layer of snow. And then that soft layer of snow is on a steep slope, and then there's a trigger, and that trigger usually is movement, okay? Not sound, okay? And then, so what happens? You've got a little piece of snow, bit of soft. For some reason it moves, and then snowballs, and snowballs, and snowballs, and snowballs. How does the avalanche end?
Badly.
Badly. Badly, right? Huge impact. What started off as a tiny little, maybe 2 centimeters of snow moving, ends up with kilometers of total destruction, but also total impact. Okay?
Bless you.
So, if I leave Holly, literally a movement can start with my friends. Okay? If I leave Holly, a movement can start, an avalanche can start. And this impacts on every level of our society. Every level. 12 disciples going out, the world becomes Christian. The Coptic Church, pretty much laying in ruins, uneducated, nothing really happening. Habib Gergis, start a Sunday school movement. One of the guys that's his disciple, Pope Shenouda, starts education, Bishop of Education. The whole church changed in 40 years. Why? Why? Because that's what happens. God created us united. God created us interconnected. God created us so that if something affects me, it'll affect the people around me. So when you hear that question, how does the church change? How does the church get better? How do we become more saintly? How does my family change? How does my group of friends change? What begins? One person. Me. Okay? It sounds really simple. It sounds really corny. But that is reality. That is how God created us. I tell you guys another story, but it's a little bit scandalous. So I'm not going to say it.
It's scary.
I'm trying to think if I can change it. No, you guys are too young.
Oh, scandalous.
But,
tell the story. Come on, man. I won't tell the one on the other.
Go for it. We have scandals.
All right, okay, I'll tell you. So,
twist your arm.
Don't let us push you.
about 20 years ago, not even, 10 years in the 1990s, in Greece, there was a terrible diocese. The church, no one went to church, no one cared. The bishop was rumored to be a bit of a womanizer. You know, things are a bit dodgy. Greeks, you know. Not Coptic. Just gotta make that clear. We're not in the Coptic church. Alright. So then what happened was that there was a priest that was this bishop's driver. And he didn't trust the bishop. So he followed him. And he found him with a woman. And that woman was that priest's wife. Oh. He took photos, published it in Greek newspapers, yeah, all over the place, so that everybody was seeing this bishop with a woman.
With, okay, his wife.
Which was the priest's wife. Can you imagine the scandal? Can you imagine? Look, it's a bit of a crude story. I don't mean it to be crude, but I'm just saying, can you imagine the scandal? No, there was a church that was really destroyed. No one went to church.
Wow.
Okay?
Wow.
And they didn't know how they were going to solve this problem. Okay? At the same time, there was a group of friends who became monks at the same time. Okay? And one of them was this really powerful guy. And he was about to go, about 10 guys, I think 11 guys, were about to go and start a restore a monastery on Mount Athos. As they were on their way, one of the bishops in the synod thought, we've got this terrible diocese, I've got a solution. So I called up this guy and said to him, look, you're not going to Mount Athos. I'm sending you to this diocese and you're going to be a bishop. And you're going to take these 10 monks with you. So they went there and they walked in. And then the bishop sat there. He got everyone together from the diocese and said, look, you guys have been through hell. You've had terrible people over you. I'm not going to do anything. I'm not going to start committees. I'm not going to give you meetings. I'm not going to educate you. I'm not going to do anything at all. All I'm going to do is, I'm going to send you 10 of the best priests you've ever seen in your lives. These 10 monks. And he sent them out, each one into a different part of the diocese. 8 years later, it was the highest participation rate in church out of all the churches in Greece. How? How? It doesn't make sense. It's illogical. Why? Avalanche. Okay? For some reason, how I live impacts on the people around me. Positive and negative. Okay? So the church's greatest impact is often through groups of friends. So I've told you there, St. Basil's group, St. Gregory of Nyssa, St. Basil the Great, and eventually another friend, St. Gregory the Theologian. Okay? three guys that literally defended the Trinity in the late third and fourth century. Okay? Later on, the Coptic Church changed through a group of friends. Greece changed through a group of friends. You guys seeing a pattern here? The church doesn't change by bishops and popes. It changes through young groups of friends, guys and girls. And yet you think when you're this age, no, I can't do anything, I can't change anything, I can't contribute anything at all. But that's rubbish. Because you don't know who you're going to be in 10 years' time. Okay? You may be the Pope Schnorder. I doubt any of you guys here, but you know, you know. Sam's got a chance.
All right? That's a bit negative, Dan.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Maybe. Take it back. Maybe, all right. No, okay. I can't.
Okay. Me?
Maybe. Maybe you're that guy. Maybe you're St. Macrina, the grandmother that produces saints. Okay? Just by your love and the way you do with your children. You show them Christ with such intensity that they can't withstand it. Maybe you're the wife, St. Amelia, you know, where you're the wife of this hectic guy, okay, who couldn't be that hectic guy if it wasn't for you. Maybe you're a guy who dies when you're 20, but you have an impact on your brothers and your sisters. Do you guys kind of see what I'm saying? Every single one of us is here for a purpose. Every single one of us meshes. Every single one of us will impact on the person around us, all right? So nothing exists in isolation. So now we're going to get to a bit of negatives. So just as saints come in clusters, so do sinners. Okay? And this is probably what I'm really saying to myself more than anything else. Alright? So there was a guy by the name of Professor Andreev. He was a very famous Russian professor of theology. And then there was a very bad story that happened in New York one day in, I think, the 1980s, where a woman, for whatever reason, was very depressed. She got her three children and she drowned them. Okay, and then she drowned herself. Okay, and it was a really terrible story at the time, and it was in the newspapers, and everyone was talking about it. And I was saying, how could she do that? Where was the government? Where was Michel Affair? Someone should have intervened. Someone would have picked up the depression, whatever. He said, I'm not going to ask any of these questions. All I'm going to ask is, where were you that night at 7 p.m. April the 4th? What were you doing? Were you contributing to the good in the world? Were you leaving a light and lighting other people's candles? Or were you contributing darkness? Or even worse, were you just doing nothing? Were you lukewarm? And once you ask that question, we all stop and we realize, am I really giving light to the world? Am I really that light that is on a lampstand, on top of a mountain, giving light? Or is it hidden under a basket? Or even worse, is it off? And I say it to myself more than you guys. It's something we need to be really thinking about, okay? Because sin also starts in avalanches, okay? All of us, one for all and all for one, okay? All of us affect each other, okay? So sin starts in avalanches. So what happens then? If one friend lives away from God, what happens? Let's say I'm in a group of friends and I decide to walk away from God. Imagine I say to myself, you know, I'm strong. I can stand next to him. It's all good. You know, I'm stronger than him. I'm all right. I'm pure. You know, I can handle it. I'm going to bring it to God. Can you imagine the piece of snow that is standing next to the piece of snow that starts the avalanche? Because, you know, I'm stronger. I can handle this. Oops. Okay? Why? Okay? Because you can't hold its ground. You can't hold your ground. So number one, what if I start that avalanche of sin? And number two, what if I'm standing next to the snow that starts it? What's the end? It's the same. It's an avalanche. I've had a negative impact on the earth. I've brought darkness to the earth. Whether I start it, whether I'm standing next to it. Okay? So am I saying you've got to cut off your friends that aren't good? Oh, that guy doesn't pray 3 hours at the hell hanging out with him. That's not what I'm saying at all. What I'm saying is you need to realize that through your friendships, you will impact the world either positively or negatively. And likewise, through your relationships, you will be affected by the world either negatively or positively. Okay? So what happens, for example, if you put fire next to metal? What happens? What happens with blacksmiths? We haven't got any blacksmiths anymore. We're too advanced in
blacksmiths. No, we've got doctors around here.
Stupid people. So you've got this fire, and you've got this metal, and you put the metal in the fire. What happens to the metal?
Gets hot.
Yeah, gets hot, gets red. Can start fires. Okay? So energy was absorbed by that metal, and then it's emitted. But I don't get affected by my friends. I can stand in fire and not turn into a hot piece of metal. Alright. Can that piece of metal that's in that fire help turning red? Can it help turning hot? Can it help turning into something that can start a fire somewhere else? Can it? No. No matter what you do, no matter how strong that metal is, once that metal is in that fire, it has one reality, it will be affected. And not just that, it'll take on the properties of the fire. And then what happens next? Whether you like it or not, you start fires. So when you stand in relationships to people as friends, and that relationship is negative, and you know it's negative, you have one simple property as a human being. You will absorb the properties of the people you stand next to. Whether you like it or not, no matter how strong you are. I think it was St. Macarius was sitting there one day, and they came and said to him, two monks, we were in the city and we saw this other monk, and this woman in the city was going after the monk trying to seduce him. St. Macarius jumped back in fear, and they go, what's wrong, man? That's like 200 kilometers away. And he goes, just by even mentioning that story, even hearing that, I fear for myself. Why? All of us are vulnerable. All of us can fall. All of us take on the properties of those people around us. Okay? And it works both ways. You can either take the properties of a bad or a good friend, or of a bad friend, sorry, and become bad, or you can also become good. Okay? So for example, St. Anthony, they used to say about him, he had one thing that he used to do. He didn't really have a virtue. His virtue was to suck other people's virtues, or to absorb other people's virtues. So he'd go around, and he'd wait until he sees someone that was really pure, and he'd go hang out with them for a while, be mates with them for a while, watch what they're doing, absorb their purity, take on their properties, and then they said about him that he would perfect it in himself far greater than what the original person had. And then he'd go find someone that's humble. And that's all he did his whole life. Okay? Why? Is he an old peasant, doesn't know anything about anything? No, he knows. As humans, whoever you hang out with, they will affect you. Okay? So when I was saying to you guys, number one, I can affect the people around me, that if I'm holy, maybe my group of friends can be holy. Likewise, if I hang out with holy guys or holy girls, I myself will become affected. I myself will become holy. I tried. I hung out with Buna Mahatmya. It didn't work. But generally it works. Okay? Generally it works. Okay? So, Mother Teresa, again, I alone cannot change the world, but I can cast a stone across the water to create many ripples. So either way, for good or for bad, each of us changes the world, because none of us exists in isolation. So I affect the world, I need to really recognize that, and I'm affected by the world. So, what can I do? Well, the first thing is, and this is the last slide, or second last slide, I need to start with seriousness. I need to recognize that I have an impact. I can't think, and I can't blind myself when I say this to myself, that I can exist in my bedroom or in my house and sin without it affecting the people around me. And at the same time, I need to recognize that if I live a holy life, if I live a pure life in my bedroom, in my house, then that'll affect the people around me. That'll affect my wife, it'll affect my children. It'll affect my friends, it'll affect my colleagues. That's the first thing. You need to recognize that you do not exist in a vacuum. If you do not recognize that, then we're just staying in a sense of, you know, of fantasy, not in reality. Okay? As I said, if you find peace, many will be saved. And then, avoid standing next to the guy starting the avalanche, unless it's a holy one. If it's going to be a holy avalanche, you want to get really close to that one. Jump on board. Okay? Dead serious. Have you ever thought to yourself, I want to be friends with that guy? Not because he's cool, not because the girls like him, not because he's good at soccer, but because he's holy. As a girl, I want to be friends with her. Why? Because she's just saying me. Have you ever thought about that? Maybe it's something you need to start thinking about. Maybe looking at your group of friends and saying, you know what? I'm not going to cut them off, but I'm not going to really put that much more effort into this relationship. Instead, this guy, I know he's holy. I'm going to put a lot of effort into that relationship. I'm going to be friends with that guy. It's something that happens very subtly. But once you start doing that, again, you will take on the properties of the person. And you can start an avalanche. Or if not, if you're not going to be that leader, if you're not going to be this great guy that has the real power and the real audacity to kind of shake things up and be holy, at least I'll stand next to him. And maybe a little bit rubs off on me. Okay? So we need to recognize that each one of us is affected by the actions of other, and then we're all ultimately fire and metal. We are affected like metal, but we can affect like fire. Alright, but how? The key word is progressive, and this is the last slide. So, do you guys know the story of St. Moses the Black? You guys have all heard of it, right? There's a rapist, pillager, robber, killing people, became a saint. And everyone goes, oh, he repented, he became a saint. Do you know what actually happened? How long it took him to become a saint? It was said about him, he was struggling every single day, that he would confess to his confession father 13 times in the night. Okay? And then eventually, after a couple of years, he got frustrated. Because he didn't feel that he was getting any better. He could see all these monks running around, living nice holy lives, and he didn't feel that himself, and he was still struggling with his passions. So his confession father took him up to the roof, sat him on the roof, and said to him, I'm going to sit here until the sun comes. As the sun came up, they saw the darkness slowly being chased away by the shadows. And so his confession father said to him, do you see what's happening? He goes, the light comes up. It doesn't automatically change the world. It comes up and it slowly, slowly, slowly chases away the darkness. Okay? That process is it's a process. It's progressive. It's not an instant. Okay? So, we've done that. So we need to choose. We need to choose. And this is something I think that I've been saying for a while, and I think I'm saying that because I'm saying it to myself. Alright? That I need to choose. That we need to choose that there's no such thing as lukewarm. There's no such thing as neutrality. There's no such thing as sitting on a fence. Either I'm bringing light to the world or I'm bringing darkness. And until I choose that, and until I recognize that I need to choose that, I'm living a life of fantasy. I'm doing nothing. But once I recognize that that is what I'm doing, then in every moment, again, I choose it. Progressively, again, I choose it. In this situation, I choose it. In this situation, I choose it. In this situation, I choose it. In my relationships with my friends, I now choose it. To bring light. To bring light. To hang around light. To only see light. To only be with those who have light. And then the darkness, manish. Avoid them. Eventually, those who are in the darkness will see the light. Eventually. So, take home message. One message. Saints come in clusters. Sinners also come in clusters, unfortunately. It's our choice which cluster we want to be. It's our choice how I want to affect the world, and it's my choice how I'm going to be affected by the world. Alright? Glory be to God. Cool. Any questions? Going? God damn it.
It's quite easy to say, oh, okay, they're already choose the side. It's quite easy to say, like, wait, saints or sinners are already in clusters. But you can often find that there are people that are not part of the cluster. If you're one of those people that doesn't have a spot where you necessarily belong, how do you build that relationship with
someone? A holy person?
Yeah.
Sure, when you say you're not part of a cluster, whether we like it or not, we're all part of clusters. Whether we like it or not. It's just that that cluster might be very negative. Alright? But in terms of choosing, it's very simple. If I'm going to be part of the light, I'm going to walk towards the light. I'm going to hang out with people of the light. If I'm going to be part of the darkness, then I'm going to spend time with them. The problem is not that. The problem is that most of us are standing in this middle ground, not thinking it makes a difference. Thinking, I can stand here, and I'm not really part of them, I'm not really part of them. I just go to church, I do my own thing, go to uni, build myself a nice house. You know? And that's the problem.
So Dan, how's the positive cluster? I'm trying to find another word about cluster, but yeah. Anyway. How's a positive cluster supposed to affect that negative cluster? Like, really, part of our job description, in a sense,
to go out.
Exactly.
And shine the light.
So if I exclude myself from being around that avalanche, sure. The bad one, the piece of ice, if I exclude from being next to these people, then how can I ever have a positive effect on these people?
Sure. And so in the same way, if I walk into a room and I say, you know what, I'm not going to be light, and I'm going to walk into that room and give them light, it's not going to work. So you need to have that light first. So unless you're changed, you can't change anyone else. That's the first thing. Second thing is that I'm not saying you can't hang out with the world. Christ doesn't tell us, you know what, you can't be part of this world. All right? We're all of this world, but we're not of this world. We're all here. We're all interacting with the world, but we're not conforming. That means I still have relationships with my work colleagues. I still have relationships even with people at church that may not be the best. Okay? But the way I impact upon them is not by being best friends with them and hanging out with them 24/7 and doing what they do, if it's negative. What I do is I be light. And then when I'm light, I can impact on people around me. People see that light. They see there's something different. Okay? There's a guy called Blaise Pascal, okay? Some famous philosopher of some kind of silly things. But one thing he did say which was useful was he goes, you can never convince someone to be Christian. There's no point going through logical proofs and trying to convince their minds and all these other kind of things. The only thing you can do is to make them wish and desire to be like you. So that when you live holy, when you live in control, when you live free from your passions, someone sees that and goes, you know what? I don't know what it is. I want to be like him. Then they're changed. That recently came up to me. So I was working, and a girl came up to me and she goes, do you know, are you Coptic? Yeah. Do you know this guy? And I said, yeah. She goes, he is the greatest human being I have ever seen or met in my life. So that's pretty heavy words, man. Relax. All right? And then I go, what, were you guys close or something? She goes, no, I was just with him. I was studying together at uni. And I was with him for 1 year or something, studying with him. Yet, at that time, and then I asked this guy about it. Do you know what's that? He goes, nah. Okay? He had no idea. He was just living his normal life. And this girl met him and just, she couldn't shake how heavy an image of Christ there was in this guy. She didn't even know it was Christ. She just said he was the greatest human being she's ever met in life. Now, if you asked her, with this guy, was he best friends with her? No. Did he hang out with her every day? No. What did he do? He was light. She saw the light and wanted to be like him. She didn't even know he was Christian. She just knew he was Coptic. He was not Christian around. Okay. See you. In short.
So really though, our inner circle then. No, because I made this point to my children. Yeah. Okay, and
mind you, this is the future St. Macrina. No.
I'm on that goes crazy when they ask me for dinner and I've just walked in the door. And said, that's me. That's the crazy lady.
Okay.
No, because your inner circle, like, you know, you have an inner circle of friends. You talk about work colleagues and you know, people you go to uni with or work with or whatever you do, right? But that inner circle that you're talking about, they're the ones that have to really be
100%.
The positive one.
You can't.
Exactly.
You really can't.
I think it's my kids on Sunday.
No. what you say is exactly right. Your inner circle, your core, the people you go to for your advice, the people that influence you the most in your life, the people that you're literally standing in the fire with, okay, becoming metal that's turning into fire with, they need to be the same. They need to be for all life. If they're not, then you guys need to have a chat with each other. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong as a group to sit there and go, you know, guys, I don't think what we're doing is right. I don't think what we're doing is, you know, all day, every day, we're playing FIFA. Okay? And there's nothing wrong with that. Why don't we just pray a bit together? Why don't we go to the monastery together? Why don't we go on a mission trip together? Why don't we do something else together? I guarantee you, there'll be the most fun you've ever had in your life. Ever in your life. So maybe as a group, okay, maybe I'm not light. Okay, maybe the people I'm hanging out with aren't light. Maybe the least I can do is try to psych each other up to do some positive things. Try to psych each other up to become light. It's much easier to do it as a group than by yourself. Pray together. Organize to pray together at the same time. These kind of things. Have you seen this book? Read this book.
Exactly. It's support in your spiritual struggle, really. Yeah. That's what it's about. Like, I tell my kids, I used to tell my Sunday school kids, like just a small example, is that if like if you have a friend from outside of church, no concept of God or whatever, and then you do something really bad, whatever really bad means to you, okay? You do something bad and you tell this other person, I went out on Friday night and got totally sloshed. I was in the gutter.
Sloshed. It's an interesting
thing. Well, I just want to use the other word that I hear the kids use.
Sloshed.
Smashed. Okay, whatever. No, what I'm trying to say is, tag it over at people.
Guys, stop acting like you're sloshed.
Your friend at work is going to say, wow, you had a mad night, you know?
Yeah.
All right? But if you tell a friend from church, then that friend might say to you, I think maybe you need to talk to Abuna.
I think there's a big difference. You know what? Psych each other up to do things. Like, you guys are new. You will never have so much freedom you have now. Yet there's one thing that I noticed, it's a little bit different. Although now I'm seeing a bit of hope. It's a little bit different. That was a bit different when we were at uni. When we were at uni, we, like, our uni revolved around our lives. So, you know, you'd go do whatever else, and then uni was on the side. Now it seems that uni's taking over your lives a little bit. What about this? Psych each other up. Go attend masses during the week together. You hear there's some bishop coming somewhere else, some hectic bishop. Go ahead, go over there and hang out. And, you know, you hear there's going to be a mad talk somewhere. Go and do that. Encourage yourselves. Encourage each other to do positive things. Instead of sitting there all the time, and if you're doing something at uni, it's just studying your rubbish. Okay? Go and pick up your Bibles, do that. Study your Bibles. Get out a book, read it together. Okay? Oh, you guys are boring, shy of it. No. Take back control of your lives a little. You guys have the chance to impact the world. Okay? You have the chance. But if you spend the time now where you're most free, okay, and you're just in that middle ground doing nothing, or worse, in the darkness, then you can't do anything. But if you're a group and you're strong and you're psyching each other up to do positive things, not shopping every single day, not did you see this Facebook dress every single day, okay? But doing positive things. Not FIFA every single day. Not just study every single day. But positive things constantly. Then you'll find that the entire group changes. When that group changes, the group underneath you changes. When that group changes, the group underneath that changes. Okay? In the words of Abuniyu, that's how a wave starts in the church. Alright? So, I think it's time that we all start to get a bit serious and realize, I can't stand in the middle of the ground anymore. I need to choose. For the love of God, choose the light, don't choose the darkness. Yeah.
You know, you mentioned like the negative
avalanche. There's no hope for me.
No, I'm saying part of the negative avalanche.
Yes.
Yeah? So, like, I'm assuming that, like, if you affect someone badly, that you're accountable for their sins, right? Or, like, you're held sort of accountable.
You're definitely part of it, yeah.
So then, like, but why? Like, why is his spirituality in my hands? Like, why am
why?
I.
You have to ask God. You know why? Because God created us in the image of himself. And what's God? Trinity. Three persons in one. So God creates us in the image of his unity. And that's why everything we do affects each other. That's why when you come to the Eucharist, there's such a thing as I. It's how we say we in every part of the Eucharist, in every part of the liturgy. It's how we say our Father. It's how we say let us give thanks. Because we're connected. We're connected. Which is why in the Eucharist, one of the oldest prayers in the Didache, the earliest apostles' writings, would say, when they're praying for the Eucharist, they'll say, O Lord, let us gather us like you've gathered the bread and the wheat from all the different mountains to create this one bread. Likewise, gather us all from our different cities so that we can become one body of Christ. Okay? Which is why in the Eucharist, it's not just the bread and wine that becomes the body and blood of Christ, it's also us, the community that's transformed into the body of Christ. Okay? Whether we like it or not, we are so interconnected because we're created in the image of God. And the image of God means we're created in the image of his unity. Why do you think when Christ is talking, all he talks about is stuff like, oh, Father, that they would be in us, that we could join them and make our house with them. Why? I abide in you and abide in me. Whoever eats my flesh abides in me, etc., etc., etc. Why? Because unity is the basis of God. And that's what God wants us to be a part of. And that's what every human being yearns for, a human being. And that's what every human being will be affected by other human beings, and why every human being can affect those around them. Whether we like it or not, this is our reality. Yeah. Any other questions?
What about loners?
Loners. Sure.
Yeah, but so, it's all up for you, bud. It's okay.
Sure. So, again, moving away from my topic a little bit, but what about the people that have no friends?
Scott, no friends.
He's got no friends.
Scott, no friends.
Scott, no friends.
Is his name Scott?
Scott, aww, no friends. You can hear Tanner's hearing this a long time ago. Had no friends. But yeah, look.
It's his
again,
middle name, Scott.
Again, like I said, every human being can be affected, but every human being can also affect. All right? That means, again, that candle, you can walk up to somebody that hasn't got that many friends and include them in that group. How you do that, I'll leave to your next topics. How to be more welcoming.
I think what we're done with this topic, can't we do? No.
Was that my topic?
No.
What, loneliness?
Was that no. It's coming up in the next thing.
You're about loneliness, or I experience some loneliness. That's a different story. It's 2 weeks ago.
Deodorant can easily fix that for you, Tan.
It's against my religion.
Wow.
You've missed the turn off.
Any other questions? Going, gone.
Let's stand up for free. Guys.
Sorry.